My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello there, and welcome to Arch and Towers, where I'm glad to report my week away was well spent. Having repeatedly bigged up Kimi Raikkonen's chances of a comeback win, I took it upon myself last week to drive all the way to Enstone and give the little Finn the pep talk of all pep talks. I'm glad to say it worked, as Lotus finally got the kind of luck McLaren have been happy to dish out all season, and the Heffel outfit found its name on the top step of a Formula One podium for the first time in 25 years. And to celebrate this momentous occasion, we have a bumper EDP F1 podcast in store for you all to enjoy. And here are the guys to enjoy it with. Firstly, a man who gets his kicks from Romain, Perry Hamilton.
Hello.
Hello there.
Kicks from Romain, that may have gone over my head.
Well, it's the closest I could find to champagne.
Oh, okay. Grosjean.
Yeah,
I get it now. Okay, that's a good one. I like it.
A boisterous start. Good to have you. Fantastic work last week in my absence.
It was my pleasure. We found it all quite easy, didn't we, chaps? It was a breeze.
Yeah, it's only me who makes this look difficult. And then there's a man who gets his kicks from Charles Peake. David Tillier.
Hello.
You right there, David?
Yeah, pretty good. Yeah.
After 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, I've kind of lost track of what I should call you now. I had kind of editor of gridwalk.tv down to a T.
Just call me David. That'll do.
David. Yeah. Our resident
collector of replica helmets.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I'll find something for the start of next season for you.
Excellent.
I'll find
something. Well, we haven't reached the end of this one yet. But that's fine. That's good. We'll do that. Great stuff. As I said, we have David, Perry both here. But it's even better this week. There's an EDP F1 Pod XXL. There's the man we simply call the Oracle, even if you did have quite a bad week last week. It's Kyle Cumbers.
Hello there.
We won't mention it. Not until the second podcast. How are you doing, Kyle?
Very good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Great to have you on board and back in the groove and back in the pod. The man who puts Luton on the EDP F1 map. It's Mr. John Luton. John, long time. Great to have you back.
You could say his career's taking off. No way else. No.
Could.
Okay.
Don't
edit that out. Leave that in there.
Edit?
No, don't.
We don't edit these things, do we? You might have edited it last week. That's not how we normally roll. Special treatment. Okay. Well, gents, great to have you on board. Kimi Raikkonen is a Formula One race winner yet again, as we all said would be the case at the start of the season. Yes, Perry?
Yes, it's what we said. I have to wonder, though, Michael, when you went down to give him his little pep talk, I can only imagine that his response to you was very similar to the one that he gave his engineer. The two times that his engineer tried to sort of get him to do something specific on the track, I can only imagine it was along those lines.
Yes, it would well have been if he'd barely answered the door as it knocked. I suppose, it really was just a question of a bit of luck falling into place for Lotus. It's only probably the thing that had kept them off the top step up until that point.
Well, luck didn't have anything to do with that, I don't think, this weekend. I think it was thoroughly deserved. I was actually very, very excited, even to the point when, you know, being a bit of a Lewis Hamilton fan, I'll admit, even saying that, when Kimi tried to overtake him earlier on in the race, I actually got up off my seat and said, "Go on, Kimi!"
Oh!
And everyone else around me was kind of looking at me going, "What are you doing?" But yeah, no, I don't think there's anything. Luck didn't have anything to do with it. I think he was on it, like a car bonnet.
Oh dear.
I felt left out. You were saying all the bad jokes. So I felt I needed to get one in early.
No, that's a good point. It's fair enough. Yeah, but surely he wouldn't have won if Lewis had stayed running.
It's hard to say whether or not he would have still won, because you never quite know how much pace Lewis had in reserve. And he was quick all weekend. But that being said, I still think of the people who finished, he was probably one of the better drivers. Given the amount of good drives there were this weekend, you can't necessarily say he's the best driver, because that's a hard one to call. But yeah, no, he thoroughly deserved it. And I think the car was quick and the Finn was quicker.
Love it, love it. Come on, though, Carl Lewis. Surely that was his race until his McLaren gave up.
It was his race. And I disagree. I thought, yeah, Kimi was very lucky. But obviously, he got, as he's been saying for a while, he's needed good starts to get good results, and he got a good start.
It was a brilliant start, wasn't it?
So he kind of put himself in a position to win it if anything went wrong. Lewis Hamilton's story of the season, unlucky again. But yeah, Kimi deserved. I think a while ago I did say that Lotus wouldn't win the season after saying all season.
Oh, here we go, here we go.
So I said, I was one of the people that said they wouldn't win. So I apologise to Mr. Raikkonen.
That's all right, I'm sure he'll let you go. John, was Kimi's start better than Mark Webber's was terrible, if that makes sense?
I think Kimi's start was amazing. It's just the thing about it was, though, is that the only thing he actually needed to do all race, because from then onwards it was just plain sailing. He just had to keep it on the track, because as soon as Lewis moved out of the way, he didn't have any problems. He was just, you know, in his own race, really, just driving around. Whilst, you know, for him it must have been a bit more boring, because obviously behind him there was lots and lots of action going on, but Kimi was just driving around. He had no problems. You know, it was a simple race compared to earlier on in the season, where, you know, he was leading races or looked like he could, and then all of a sudden he would just drop back down the pack as it got nearer to the end. So it was a good start and a good drive overall.
He knew what he was doing. I think that was the message, wasn't it?
He knew full well what he was doing. I mean, this is Kimi Raikkonen we're talking about. He's a world champion, he's a race winner, and he can drive anything with wheels or even tyres, even tracks. You know, anything that goes with an engine, Kimi Raikkonen can drive it, and it's what he wanted to do. And you knew that as soon as Hamilton dropped out of the way, that taste was there, and he'd missed it. He really had missed it, and he attacked that track very, very well. And he was a great drive.
It was fantastic that the commentators on, I can't remember which I was watching it on now, but whichever channel it was, felt they had to apologise for the way he spoke to his engineer during the race. But I guess that's the way he rolls. They also mentioned an interesting point about whether Kimi has been lacking something this season in terms of his hunger, in terms of overtaking and pushing the boat out, maybe to make up places. I'm not sure if that's fair or not, but with him, he signed up for Lotus for next year. The car is good and they're still developing it, and to look back on it with the recent updates, the signs of promise for next year. David, just looking, cutting a few corners to 2013.
Next year is a little bit difficult for Lotus, I think, because they've got questions about their position, their funding, who actually owns them, who's going to own them going forward. They know they want to continue with the Lotus name, but that's not really going to bring them any money, because unfortunately Hethel isn't able to provide them with any at the moment, so they're only going to be able to use it for their own sort of historic purposes, as it were. They've got a good platform to build on, and I think they probably understand their car a bit better now. It'll be interesting to see how they come out of the gates next year, but overall I think they've done a very good job with a very sensible approach to it from a Raikkonen point of view. I mean, Grosjean's a slightly different story, but you know, look at Raikkonen, he's scored points in every single race. You know, there's a reason why he's third in the championship. You know, he might not have put in that many electrifying drives in terms of overtaking, but he's consistent and has done a very, very solid job. And fortunately enough, I noticed this weekend that because he won this weekend, Jenson Button keeps his record to be the only driver to have finished third in a world championship without actually winning.
There you go. Yeah, there, that's a good point. Yeah. I like that.
Podcast trivia.
What do you reckon?
What's the next season with Lotus? I think that this season has been a building block. No team who is, you know, what you would talk about being in a top four, top five team, no team likes to look at their season as a building block. But that's exactly what it is. You've got a guy coming back into it who hasn't raced since 2009. You've got another guy coming up into it who made an absolute hash of his last chance in Formula One, then went back, settled down and dominated in GP2. So you haven't got guys who are up to the minute, ready to go, were racing last season and can hit the ground running. You need to spend a little bit of time pushing these guys to the limit and seeing what they can do. Kimi lacking that hunger going into corners and making overtakes is understandable, because, you know, his teammate shows too much hunger, goes in too hard, and look at him, you know, he's had a ban and he's caused all kinds of mayhem and havoc. And I think until Kimi gets a full understanding of the car and knows that he can win a race with it now, and that's the difference, is you know you can win. So when he rolls out of the pit lane to go for his qualifying laps, he might go a little bit harder, and then when he gets an electrifying start like he did at the weekend, maybe he will throw up the inside a little bit more than he used to, because he's going to keep evolving into this car. And next season, as David says, a little bit of funding and what have you in the right places, this team can challenge maybe for a title.
It's an interesting one with the funding. Of course, the Lotus title sponsorship, the car is a Lotus chassis, which was decided last summer. Don't think the FIA are too keen on chassis changing too often, so we'll have to see what happens with them. With the name and whether the goodwill will run a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think Gen I have come out and said, I think, that they want to keep the Lotus name. I think from their point of view, it's quite a nice name to be associated with. It's probably a good way of gathering sponsors. They'd have to rename it something random if they didn't have Lotus, because it's not going to be Renault. Renault are no longer a manufacturer, so Lotus is an obvious choice for going forward. And hopefully, if everything gets sorted at Hethel, you never know, they might come back and put some more investment into it once everything's sorted out in Malaysia.
Depends if Proton come along and try and buy it out, and they want it to be. Do we know any models of Protons?
Satria, the Neo. The Jumbuck. Is actually. I won't tell you what it was internally named, Lotus. I know the insider story, but it's unfortunately it's too rude to say on a podcast. But there are rumours about Proton being bought by Volkswagen potentially, and then obviously Volkswagen would inherit Lotus automatically. So there is that, and Volkswagen have expressed an interest in being in Formula One. So if that happens, I mean, it's a bit tenuous at this point, but. It's got potential.
Well, the issue is even Lotus a part of Proton now, though? With
yes.
It's still with the DRB Hycon takeover.
Yeah, it's still part of Proton. It's still owned by them. The only thing is that DRB have come in and looked at the fact that Lotus have made a profit in God knows how many years and have owed £400 million worth of debt, haven't paid suppliers in a long time. They're not making cars at the moment. And basically what they've done is they've just sort of suspended things for a time being, so that they can get their affairs in order. But they have said that they are committed to Lotus going forward, but it's got to be a viable business model. Okay. So, unfortunately, it hasn't been for quite some time.
It hasn't. No, that is worthy of a whole new podcast, I think.
And I could wax lyrical for hours about it.
Right then, we know what time it is. Lap 20 of 54 or whatever, if you like, metaphorically speaking. This isn't a race. But this is the EDP F1 pit stops. And we'll start with a massive pit stop at the Red Bull Garage Championship. Then we have two races to go. Vettel's drive on Sunday. How good was it, John?
I think it was good, but I don't think it was quite as good as people are making out. I think he got quite a bit of luck with the pit stops, timing of safety cars. It could have been a lot easier than it could have been for him to get past. I mean, it was a really good drive, but at the same time, he had a bit of luck kind of like sway him on the way for the second pit stop. Was lucky just because obviously the safety car then came in, which meant he gained some places and everyone else still had to pit. So, he did get a bit of an advantage that way. But he did prove that he can drive and he proved that he can overtake people and that he was prepared to fight to get as close as he possibly could. So from that point of view, it was a really good drive.
I have no doubt out of his three championships, if you win this one, this will be a country mile better than the other two, personally. And I thought it was... he got the luck maybe, but he maybe made his opportunities. What do you reckon, Carl?
I think he was pretty lucky. But I'd say he was very unlucky, obviously, Saturday, because it wasn't his fault, and he got all that luck back on the Sunday. But obviously he drove very well to take advantage of the luck. It was a good race, but with how the race worked out, I think anybody else could. Mark Webber could have done it, for example. He'd done it in China last year, or the year before. Starting at the back of the grid and then on the podium. But I think regarding his championship, it probably will be his... I mean, they're all good, aren't they?
Any championship's a good win, isn't it?
But from in a way, he was struggling for the first half of the season. To come back the way he has done is pretty impressive. So I think, and also to win it three times in a row is pretty special as well, isn't it?
Very special indeed. I don't remember him really whinging, complaining, or being a pain in the backside once in that first half of the season.
No. Just he went out there, did what he could do, did what the team asked of him. Sometimes did a little bit more than what the team thought was possible. And now you reap the rewards of that. You show your commitment, you show your maturity, you show your consistency, and you know that the team is working to always increase your results and your abilities. And eventually, when that hits the track, it's then your responsibility to pay the team back for the investment and time and money that they've shown in you. So, you know, if they give you an absolute dog at the beginning of the season, you don't moan, you don't whine, you don't complain. You get out there, you drive the wheels off of it, and who knows, you know, by Valencia, suddenly you're in a car that actually can make a bit of a difference, and you have to go out there and still drive the wheels off it and do it. And that's what Seb does. I mean, like him or hate him, I know there's a bit of a backlash against him because he's too clean cut and he's too good and he's too quick and it's boring when he wins all the races. And, you know, we hear people say this a lot, but, you know, like him or hate him, he drives, he doesn't moan, he doesn't complain, and he is a good driver. And I've said on this very podcast, I've said in the past, you know, Seb really needs to prove himself by being a driver who can win a race, not just win a championship. It's easy to win from the front, but can you make it happen from, you know, from the very back of the grid? And he proved that he can do that. My question is, why don't they just get him into the Q3, leave him in the garage, don't risk you using your tyres, and fuel him with full fuel and say, off you go? If he can get from the back of the grid to up on the podium, sure, he can get from 10th to 1st. Why doesn't that make sense as a theory? This is what I'm saying.
He'd have probably won that race, I'm sure, if he started on the front row, probably by a couple of laps.
Oh, yes.
In the end. Cracking move on Jensen. Sorry to say it. David, it was a cracking move.
Yeah, it was good. And you know, he did admit himself, Vettel that is, that it was very difficult to get past JB. You know, he was used to getting past everyone, you know, going forward from the back. He did very well at easily passing a lot of people. And Jensen made his car very, very wide, but it was a good move, you know, good driving from both of them. So that was quite good fun to watch. I think going around what these guys have said, he was unlucky, he was lucky, or he was very lucky with what happened throughout the race, but stellar drive.
Absolutely. One thing, though, I remember slating McLaren for mucking up Hamilton's fuel on qualifying earlier in the season. Forgive me, I can't remember which race it was. So shall we slate Red Bull for this, or is it just it's just a little oversight? Or was it all Renault's fault?
Well,
it seemed to be what they suggested.
They're passing the buck. According, you know,
apparently it's their fault.
Yeah, if you speak to Christian Horner, they don't put the fuel in the car. They just tell Renault how many laps they want to do, and Renault do the rest. So it's all Renault's fault as far as they're concerned.
What do that the guys at Red Bull do then?
Exactly. That seems to be the corporate message coming from Red Bull anyway.
Well, I'm sure Renault approved of that one. Brilliant. Fernando Alonso, I don't know what to mention about Fernando Alonso. It was obviously a good drive, but I'm sure when he started the race, he was hoping for a much bigger gain on points on Seb. Then he ended up getting, I'm seeing a couple of nods, I'm sure we all agree with that, a lot for Fernando to do over the coming two races. Nico Rosberg crash when he flew over Nairn Cartikane. I'm still not exactly sure what happened to his HRT. It was a spectacular crash. It was one where I think we all just winced remembering it. It was a bit sickening, and it could have been horrible. And it's going to bring up the closed cockpit debate again.
It is. But I have to make an admission here. On the coverage, I think all that we saw initially was just the aftermath of it. Didn't actually see the impact. It wasn't until the replay. And I instantly said, and that's why Nairn Cartikane shouldn't be in Formula 1. I kind of had to eat my words about 30 seconds later when they showed the replay and it showed that it wasn't his fault. I still think there is a little bit of truth in what I said, but not for that reason. Yeah. But anyway, and then I went on a rant, I think, in my living room about pay drivers.
You should record these.
Yes.
Put them on a podcast.
Yes, exactly, a rant podcast. But, it was an unfortunate accident, but it's a testament to actually how safe these cars are that was a massive smash. And actually, really, most people will go, fair enough, it's just one of those things. Because it wasn't actually that big a deal. Both drivers got out without even a limp.
Yeah. And they sort of talked to each other, didn't they? And stuck inside the track.
Not exactly. You watch a game of football these days and someone gets tackled and they're holding their ankle, yet these guys crash at 150 miles an hour and they walk away from it.
Don't bring the diving debate into the podcast, David, please. Sergio Perez also had a little coming together that ended his race. With the coming together was with Romain Grosjean, and Mark Webber was involved in it, wasn't he, at the same time. That was all a bit messy. I know you guys mentioned Sergio Perez last week, but it's not really gone that well for him since he signed his little McLaren deal, has it, John?
It's been a bit poor. I don't know if it's just the pressure already getting to him already, because of before he could kind of just get on with his race, whilst now people are looking at him knowing that, you know, he's replacing Lewis Hamilton and there's some kind of expectation there. But, you know, it was a silly little battle for all of them to be in. You know, Grosjean, it wasn't his fault that he ended up knocking Webber out, which was quite lucky for him, because otherwise Webber would have been calling for him, you know, for his head again. But yeah, I think Perez, it was just, he didn't really know when to pull back, and, you know, everyone was going all over the place and four cars battling over two corners. It's just a bit too much, you know, no matter how wide the track is.
Yeah, I felt sorry for Romain, because Perez had gone completely off the track and then came in and basically cut him up, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, you couldn't blame Grosjean. He saw a gap and, like I said, Perez went off the track and thought, oh, I'm coming along, getting to the corner, not worrying about anybody else coming through.
So. What do you reckon McLaren make of... Because I think it's the same with Lewis looking at Mercedes, because he knows where he's going next year. He can't help but look at them and go, oh, gee, they're rubbish. or McLaren, you know, Martin Whitmarsh sitting there going, oh, Sergio did that today, did he? They're bound to, aren't they?
Yeah, maybe that's part of the pressure that's on him, that he's realised all people at McLaren are watching me now and watching, as John said, it's that pressure now that he get away with before. Now everybody's going, oh, well, he's driving for McLaren, he shouldn't be doing that next year. So,
and McLaren have come out and said that he is a work in progress, so you know, they understand that he's not a 100% polished driver. And he is going to need a bit of time to get used to it. But up until the point that he went off the track, I thought he was doing pretty damn good with that little manoeuvre and his sort of the opportune sort of taking that sort of that gap and going for it, until he then decided to go way off track and then come back in again and
got a bit lost, didn't he?
Yeah, so it was 50% good, 50% awful.
Force India. Old Nico and Paul had a little coming together. Mm. Now, I have a theory on this.
Go for it.
That Paul D'Resta bigged up, a lot of opportunities, changed his manager halfway through the season. Nico Hülkenberg's the guy who gets the move to Sauber. And to me, Paul D'Resta just all weekend sort of drove like someone who was in a bit of a subconscious strop.
Are you thinking this was an on-track tantrum?
No, I just think that's how it... I don't think that's had anything to do with them coming together on the first lap, but that just... What's up with Paul D'Resta? That's what I'm saying.
What's up with Paul D'Resta? As you say, he's had a lot of fanfare, and we've now had two vacant seats at different teams. You know, high profile teams, Mercedes and McLaren, then that left a space at Sauber. He's not got any of those seats, and he is, you know, being lauded left, right and centre as, you know, one of the fastest young drivers on the track. He's probably going to want to know where his money's going to his management team. You know, he doesn't want to be stuck at Force India. Maybe this will be the year that Force India take a jump forward. We said it would happen this season. It hasn't happened this season. We hoped it would happen this season. It didn't happen this season. We are looking next season and thinking, okay, Force India, they've had some good results. But this season, you know, nothing's been that spectacular for them. They need to build on this going forward if they want to keep D'Resta happy. Now, if you put a car under him that will do the job, you're going to get podiums and you're going to get some significant finishes. And that is how you get yourself a seat in a top-tier team. Put yourself on one of those steps. And unfortunately, Paul's not doing that. Maybe that's the car. It's probably about, I'd say, 65-70% the car. But at the same time, the driver has to take some responsibility for that. You know, if you're going to get caught in a bunch, maybe that's the time to ease off, or maybe it's the time to power through. I don't know, I don't drive Formula 1. But but there will be opportunities that he will have missed, or opportunities that he will have squandered. And that is what needs to stop. And bear in mind, you know, he's still a very young driver in this thing. He's got a career ahead of him, we can but hope. And maybe it is just a case of his management team, you know, ushering patience into him and just saying, you know, it'll come, just take your time. You know, next season, that's when more contracts are finishing. Who knows, you know, what's going to happen there? But he, at the moment, he needs to show more if he thinks he deserves more. That's where I stand on Paul de Resta.
There is, of course, a Force India seat going next year, I believe, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Hülkenberg will be at Sauber. I did note down all your suggestions, predictions from the other week. Jaime Alguersuari, maybe.
Yes.
It's a possibility.
Yeah, I like to go a little bit random with my predictions.
No, indeed. Well, but Charles Peake, maybe he'll get the drive. We never know. One very quick one. Marussia Caterham, bit of a battle going on there. Very interesting to note that... was it Charles Peake who out-qualified Vitaly Petrov? I think it was off the top of my head.
I think so, yeah.
Out-qualified him.
But Heikki nearly got the 12th place that I predicted last week.
Did.
Nearly.
Yes, which would have been an epic score. Yeah,
nearly isn't good enough, unfortunately, but...
No. It's a close one between those two teams. Closer than I would say it has been at any point since they all arrived on the grid. Two races for Caterham to pick up a 12th or better and salvage their 10th place in the Constructors' Championship on what I'm pretty sure has been a fairly disappointing season for the old Hingham lot. We'll see how that one finishes up. And that, I think, is the EDP Pit Stops. Still haven't got a jingle. If anyone wants to send in a jingle, you're more than welcome, just to save me coming up with one. Because that might not be pretty.
Why not just find a recorded sound of one of those wheel guns?
So I was thinking, you go,
there you go. That is going to be cut. Next week, that is going to be the jingle.
Well played.
I might even mix it together for some beats. Anyway, time is rapidly wasting away. Good quality waste, obviously. Highlight, driver, team of the weekend. Gentlemen, I ask you to be efficient with your time and these suggestions, and I'm going to start with Perry.
Highlight was Sebastian Vettel going around the outside on the same corner where Mark Webber spun off twice, as if to say, here's how you do it, mate, which was absolutely wonderful. Also coupled with that was Fernando's late charge, which was good. That was very, very close. Team of the weekend, I'm going to give it to Lotus, you know, on the top step of the podium for the first time in years and years and years, and a solid drive from Kimi to do it as well. Driver of the weekend, I'm going to come out of left field at you all here.
Pastor Maldonado.
Sebastian Vettel's the obvious choice. Kimi Raikkonen, and we've already spoken about how good that was, but at the same time, you'd expect that race, you know, handed to him. Pastor Maldonado qualified very highly, got bumped up because of Seb being dropped down, made it through pretty much the whole race incident-free, and brought it home in a very respectable fifth for Williams. That is only his second points finish of the season, his first being the win in Spain.
It's amazing how Pastel's good weekends tend to be the ones where we don't notice him.
That's exactly right. And so that's my lot for that.
Fantastic. Kyle?
My highlight would probably be Vettel crashing into the DRS sign.
What is he doing? It keeps slamming down.
It was a bit harsh to Ricardo. I thought, you know.
Well, he was much more apologetic after the race, wasn't he? Yeah. When he was into, but the radio was cold.
Yeah. So that was my highlight. Driver of the weekend. I'm gonna have to be a bit biased and go Lewis Hamilton. I thought he was so quick over the weekend.
Over the weekend.
And team, I'll go Williams. I think fifth and eighth for them. So a good points finish and. Yeah, 2 points finishes. So, yeah, okay, Williams, my team of the week.
Absolutely, that's a really good weekend for them.
For me, highlights was probably, I think, all the radio transmissions. I think it was the most entertaining race just for them. If you're on F1 and you were just listening to the pit channel, that was more interesting than some of the commentary that was going on, because there was lots of stuff happening. Driver, I'm going to go for an odd one. I'm going to go for Kobayashi, because he qualified in 15th. He got up into sixth place. He didn't do what Vettel did, but at the same time, at no point did I see him on the TV the whole weekend. But he just kind of ploughed. It just seemed one of them weekends where he just ploughed around and he's just kind of, you know, had a solid performance the same way that Maldonado did. Vettel would be an obvious choice, and so would Kimi. And team, I think it's kind of hard to actually pick a team. I think Ferrari, again, were quite consistent. Massa seemed to be getting bit better. I think now he knows that his place is secure, he's a bit more comfortable, and he's getting back into driving. He's probably driving now the best that he has done since, you know, the big accident a couple of years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. David?
Well, a highlight is definitely the DRS sign smash. Who doesn't like to see polystyrene flying to lots of little tiny bits? But my actual highlight was the interview on the podium. Obviously, we can't repeat what was said, but I'd like to think that at some point between them finishing the race and them going up onto the podium, Sebastian Vettel and Kimi Räikkönen had a little chat, and Kimi Räikkönen said, "Right, I'm going to swear on live TV," and Vettel, being the, you know, the competitive man that he is, thought, "Well, I'm going to swear as well, but I'm going to say something worse than what you said." And that's what seemed to transpire. And also just the whole thing with David Coulthard being up there and the champagne being poured on his head, and the way that he kind of said to Sebastian, I think it was, "Thanks for those words."
They're terrible interviews, but they're great watching.
That was it, all the terrible ones that have gone before have paved the way for that brilliant interview. And for me, that was my highlight. I'll keep it simple. Team of the weekend was Lotus, probably driver of the weekend or driver of the day more so. It was Alonso, just because it was a good, solid drive again, and he's keeping himself in contention. It's just unfortunate for him that Vettel had the luck and had the storming drive, but it's almost tied for best driver for me between Räikkönen, Vettel and Alonso.
Excellent. Okay, well, my highlight was actually the race itself, because I know people who've not been watching races who decided to watch it and went, "Gosh, stuff actually happened." So, you know, it's obviously good that Abu Dhabi put on that kind of a race. Team of the weekend, I would probably agree with Lotus, finally picking up a win. And driver of the weekend is obvious, because he was the driver of the weekend, and that was Sebastian Vettel. So there you go. Definitive. Brilliant stuff, gentlemen. Thank you, as always. That is going to be it for this post Abu Dhabi EDP F1 podcast. Check back in a few days. We'll have our look ahead to Formula One stateside return and the latest of what's proving to be a very competitive prediction league. Gentlemen, thank you as always for your time. We'll do a little Twitter plug, shall we? I am at Michael J. Bailey. Perry?
At PedHD56.
Kyle?
At KCumbers.
John?
At John Luton.
David?
Still at Gridwalk.
Oh!
Yeah, I'm keeping it just so, because most of my friends who follow me on Twitter don't want to hear about F1, so I'm going to be greedy. I'm keeping two Twitter accounts. So.
At Gridwalk.
Yeah, that's for the F1 stuff.
I'm going to make another Twitter account just so that I have two Twitter accounts now. I might make three so that I have three Twitter accounts.
Official PED.
Just to go one up.
F1
the real
feed.
The real PED. The real PED. Yeah.
I have another five on top of those two, but there we go.
Oh.
Well, there you go. You can pick who of us you want to abuse or ask questions. It's
and
always
none
good.
Of them do you follow Michael Bailey.
No. Yeah. Oh, we're still on that. Brilliant stuff. Thank you, all of you, for your time. We will be back in the time it takes to shout at us, "Leave me alone. I know what I'm doing." Bye for now.